Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That's a really annoying garland. So today we have topical class on Varna and education. We're continuing where Maharaj left off last week. I didn't prepare any fancy PowerPoints or anything to distract you from the boringness of it, but you can bear with me if you can. I noticed that we do a lot of Varnashram classes, and a lot of people are probably starting to wonder what's the point of it, and a lot of people probably still might not even know exactly what Varnashram is, although we try to explain it often. So with this class, I just wanted to kind of maybe at least, if I don't teach you anything, I can at least point you out into some directions where you can learn something. So I was hoping a part of my class would be a summary of the chapter 11 of the 7th canto, which is the 11th canto, and the 12th canto is Narada Muni explaining to Yudhishthira Varnashram Dham. And the first, chapter 11, is specifically about Varnas. So seeing as the subject for the topical class is Varna and education, I thought that the Varna chapter would be more applicable. Maharaj used a few of the verses in his last week's class, but I think he just kind of touched on it. But it's it's a complete summary of the whole Varna ashram system, including what each varna should do in an emergency when their livelihood is harder to gain, and then what they should do in normal circumstances. So it follows just after the section of the 7th canto where Narada Muni is telling the story of Prahlad Maharaj, and Yudhishthira is kind of a little bit excited to hear the qualities of Prahlad Maharaj, and it inspires him to further inquire about Varnashram and kind of the qualities of a advanced civilization. Sorry. And I took a bunch of notes, most likely once I find them on the little computer thing. What I did is I went through the whole chapter, and then I did a little bit of a search afterwards. And also there's a book by a Hare Krishna Dasi, Hare Krishna Mataji, that's her name, compiling all the quotes in context that Srila Prabhupada makes about Varnashram. And I found that was pretty enlightening and kind of a little bit scary, because it shows that we haven't mastered much of it. Radha Gopinath Ki! It showed that in our society we haven't taken so many steps towards what Prabhupada had envisioned. And I mean, it shows many quotes that Prabhupada says, like Varnashram Dham is impossible, it's not for this age. And then it shows like him saying that, you know, it's pretty much the only way to Krishna consciousness. And then it's like, and then it shows, you know, actually Varnashram is all about farming communities, and like there's different doctrines of Varnashram that people try to push, and you couldn't really say that any of them is strictly the one way that Prabhupada preached, because sometimes Prabhupada is saying, you know, we don't need Varnashram and actually just chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead. Mostly he's saying that in the first years that he's come to the West, but later on he's saying we need Varnashram, and I think the specific reason he uses a lot of the time is because people were falling down. So then he realized that there was a need, because, you know, Krishna consciousness is all we need on its own as a process to go back to Godhead, but people didn't have foundations to actually sustain themselves, and they had such a sinful background that they were just falling down all the time. So he decided, actually, we need to re-establish human society. Anyway, so I'll go through just the chapter. The chapter starts off with a few verses that are just beyond Varnashram. It's just like qualities that everyone should envelop. It's not that, only Brahmanas should be truthful and things like that. Like, there are certain principles that apply for everyone always, and it lists them in about three or four verses. You'll often hear them quoted, there's like this long list, and it's truthfulness and godliness and like that, one of those long ones like that. So I think the point there is the whole Varnashram is designed to make you be elevated. So these are qualities that anyone could kind of seize hold of no matter what level they're at and try to develop them, as opposed to just going, I'm a Shudra, so I can't be this, I can't be that. But actually, you can always be like a really sincere and pious soul. And then it goes on to talk about the Garbhadhana Samskara. Does everyone know what that is? Oh. Well, before the conception of a child, there is a process that you do to cleanse. Garbha means womb. It's to cleanse the womb to make it pure for the child to come, so that you have a good child. There are Vedic processes and different rituals to do that. I think Prabhupada instructed to chant that each of the partners chant 50 rounds, am I correct? Yeah, so, it's the process that's there. I'm not going to make any more comments further on it. Then after that, Narada Muni goes into each varna, and he starts with the brahmanas. Does everyone know the six duties of the brahmanas? Yes. Yep, that's two. Yep, and there's one more set of two. Yes. Now, study of the Vedas, worship, and giving charity are compulsory for the brahmanas. So actually, giving charity for brahmanas comes before accepting charity. If you're accepting charity as a brahmana and you're not pure, Prabhupada says this is nonsense. It's no good. You have to actually do your purpose as a brahmana. And it seems that studying the Vedas is has a priority over teaching the Vedas, probably because you need to actually study the Vedas to be able to teach it. And same with worshipping. So they're listed in priority. The first three are study and worship and charity, giving charity, that is. And then the other three apply. In the purport, Prabhupada explains that actually Kshatriyas can do five out of six of these duties. Can anyone guess which of the six the Kshatriyas cannot do? Take charity, yeah. Kshatriyas did not beg. Kshatriyas did not take charity. Kshatriyas are kings. They will not do that. They will give charity to Brahmanas, but they will not accept charity. It also says in the purport that Brahmanas do not pay tax. And Prabhupada also says Vaishnavas fully engaged in devotional service don't pay tax. I don't know if that's a suggestion that we should evade the tax system either. And I think if you're going to try and use it as an excuse not to pay your taxes, you should very much consider whether or not you practice full devotional service 24/7, or if you're a brahmana. Then, of course, the kshatriyas are kind of fitted into that verse, because then it goes on to the vaishyas. And, of course, the vaishyas, they do agriculture, trade, and cow protection. So they got the bullocks ploughing the field, and they've got the cows making the milk, and then they make enough for the shudras they employ and themselves, and then they trade the rest for goods and trinkets. And they're usually very, very wealthy because of that. So you can see automatically here, like, we're coming from an industrial civilization to an agrarian civilization in the model of Varnashram. So, I mean, you could say that you could practice it individually in an industrial society, but I think to have a communal-based Varnashram system where everyone has Varnas and Ashrams and et cetera, and we're doing it, like, you very much have to go to an agrarian economy. Although later Prabhupada will say that actually, you know, computers and IT and technology, this is all Shudra work. So it's kind of like the cities are like a different model of what Varnashram could be if you wanted to go in that direction. But mostly it works with food and agriculture. And then in the next verse, and we're up to 7:11:16, I skipped a few from the start, it goes to what Brahmanas can do as their livelihood and also what they can do in their livelihood in emergencies. So a Brahmana, I mean, we know, like, they're saintly, they're teachers, they're holy people, they're, you know, maybe professors or whatever you want to call them in the modern context. They will never become a worker. The modern trend is to get everyone on a salary, like we see now. Like, I mean, everyone wants a salary because they kind of know then they're going to get some money. But normally, like, the traditional Brahmana is not so concerned. He just makes sure that he's got, you know, food on the table and somewhere to teach, and then he'll do that. So, but if there's an emergency, if there's no brahminical saver, or there's not enough income coming in to support his family, then he can actually take on the role of a Vaishya. He can do a little trade, or he can look after some cows. And Prabhupada mentions, actually, the Brahmanas always get given cows. You always hear in the Bhagavatam, they get thousands and thousands of cows. And so if they're in struggle, then they can actually get some of these cows and start milking them and use the milk. You know, they can actually, they're not just destined to starve if no one gives them any money. I mean, they've got cows, so they can kind of use them. But this is like, this is not typical. Like, this is when you need to do it. I mean, you can see the qualities of Brahma because he's very detached. Like, he's not going to freak out with, like, may or may not care for a bank balance, etc. There's a few examples in our society. Not to say he's negligent either. Someone who's negligent with finances is not a Brahmana. That does not qualify someone to become a Brahmana. That they don't look after their family, or etc. You know, and they just, yeah. I mean, there's accepting Krishna's mercy and expecting Krishna to provide, but then there's, like, I don't know, taking it too far. If I could throw that one in. And yeah, then it goes on to explain what different varnas can do in an emergency. Like, nowadays, Prabhupada says, it's an emergency. We have no brahmanas, we have no kshatriyas, we have hardly any vaishyas, and they're all not following their principles, and we have a bunch of shudras that don't know what's going on. So now this is an emergency situation. So in an emergency situation, the lower varnas can step up. That is exemplified by Srila Prabhupada taking the society to the West and getting the Yavanism lectures, as they're sometimes called, and turning them into Brahmanas and other, you know, members of society. So this is what you have to do in an emergency situation, because you need the higher levels of society. You need Brahmanas, because if you don't have Brahmanas, then no spiritual knowledge is coming, and you're just working and you're just going to hell. You're not really doing anything useful. You're not advancing in Krishna consciousness. You're not advancing in Brahman realization. You're not going to see the demigods anytime soon. You're just working like an ass, and you're going nowhere. So you need these people in society, and they also govern a society, because we've had plenty of revolutions, socialist revolutions, French Revolution, Cuban Revolution, this revolution, that revolution. We had a modern and postmodern philosophy debate the other day, and I was attacking Marx. Vishwambhara was representing Marx, and I was just kind of getting his case because his revolution didn't work. Now, they blame all the ruling class and all the higher classes and say we need the workers to take control of society, and then everything's going to be good. That's happening now. We have workers in government, and, you know, we still get food, we get electricity, we get all these great things, but things are not really getting us back to God. they're not really getting us out of this world. So you really do need the higher classes, and which means that the lower classes have to practice not being envious of the higher classes. Because if you've got a, you know, the tendency if someone's better than you, you just kind of, you know, criticize them and wish you were better than them, so you could kind of step on them. But you can't have that mentality otherwise. Otherwise, if everyone's as my father once told me, if you're creating a committee in a business, you make sure every single person in your committee is more qualified than you. Because if it's qualified as you, then you've got a very limited business. Because we're limited. You need someone who's expert. You need experts. You can't do anything without experts. It's going to be very small. You can just, you know, maybe collect some food and that's it. You can't really go beyond that. So basically, Vaishyas and Shudras, Prabhupada's encouraging them to step up and become Brahmanas in the emergency situation until it's re-established, basically, until we have a firm footing of what a Brahmana is, what a Kshatriya is, what a Vaishya is, and what a Shudra is. And people are a little bit worried that either this is never going to happen or we won't have any conception of what's going on. I think it's probably because we have the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, but how much of a society do we have? We have communities, but they're very small communities. Like we don't have cities, we don't have big towns, you know, we just have, you know, 100 people or whatever. So this is a pretty small community. So you can't expect so many Kshatriyas to emerge to rule the giant king. I mean, we have a castle here at least, so we're up from other societies. But you can't expect a Kshatriya to march in and decide to rule the place, because they really need a kingdom. You know what I mean? They need a lot. They're big guys, you know, they got big bellies and they got big arms and they want to do some things. So you're not going to see that so much in small societies. When the society is larger, then you'll probably see an emergence of it. Like when we need a police force, then we probably need a Kshatriya to like run that police force, because otherwise our police force is going to run away. You know, you need that bravery and chivalry if there are people invading. Like no one's coming in. Has anyone invaded Radhadesh yet? Have you guys had to defend it yet? They robbed us, but that's not an invasion. That's just like a sly move on the side. I mean, you haven't had to get pitchforks and had to throw rocks off the towers or anything yet. I'd probably not, right? So, I mean, at that time, it's good to have like a Kshatriya, a big bold leader at the front and go, you know, guide the whole thing. Get Hridaya out there with a sword. You know, like, yeah, I mean, we don't, like, the advantage of the modern society is in the first world countries, it doesn't seem like there's war outbreaking everywhere. It seems to be, you know, there's a lot of communication going on between the nations. Of course, you know, if you're in a third world country or all these other ones, or if you're in South America, there's like drug lords running around everywhere and there's guns and every single person has a missile launcher in their shed. But we don't have that so much. So we kind of don't see the need of having warriors and these things. Especially because nowadays, I mean, you know, you get your Kshatriya and he runs out and they just drop a bomb on him and he's gone, you know. So, like, there's a gun they used to have in the Wild Wild West and they call it the equalizer. Equalizer means, you know, it evens out the odds. So you get the little scrawny skinny dude in the big Hulk and he just shoots him and it's done, you know. Doesn't matter how much you bench lift, you're still going to get shot and you're going to die. So these modern weapons really don't help us develop Kshatriyas, because they can't really, I don't know, run at the front of the battle, so to speak. But, you know, in small, even now, you know, if a bunch of thugs came here, chances are they're not all going to have guns. And if they are, they're probably not going to know how to use them. So, you know, a little bit of a Kshatriya with a short sword won't hurt. Anyway. There's a few different livelihoods listed that can be done by the Brahmana, which usually involves begging or collecting grains or, you know, somehow just depending on the will of the Lord. Of course, Brahmanas should be acquainted with Vedic knowledge, and also Kshatriyas should be acquainted with worship of the demigods. So, I mean, in that sense, we can say worship of Krishna, because we kind of packaged the whole deal in one. But they have to, I mean, because the Brahmanas are instructing society, but the Kshatriyas are actually running it. Like in Manipur, it's a Vaishnava state. Why? Because the king is a Vaishnava. And, you know, I know everyone's not a fan of enforcing religion by a sword, not since the Crusades at least, but the norm of society is that there are Vaishnavas in this state because they follow the example of the higher authority. If you had someone in the government who was a Hare Krishna, then how many more people would join the Hare Krishnas? Unless, of course, he was like really bad and no one liked him. But I mean, like, so it's their job to do the dharmic things, to do the religious things, because people are going to follow them. I mean, the Brahmanas instruct spiritual knowledge and, you know, how to do things, but unless the Kshatriyas enforce it, then, you know, like, unless the temple management says that we've got to do something, sometimes we just will never do it. So you need to enforce it, because the honesty of the Varnashram system is there are people in society who do need to be told what to do. You know, they need to be told. It's not that everyone is going to just do the most perfect thing on their own. If you give everyone like freedom, complete freedom, chances are a lot of them are not going to do the right thing. Like, you see that when people win the lottery, they go broke. And it's because they don't know what to do with money. You know, like most people are shudras, so you give them money and then they blow it. If a Vaishya wins the lottery, then he'll probably, I don't know, buy Coca-Cola or something. Obviously not. But, you know, he'll buy business and he'll invest in real estate and he'll do things that are going to get him more money. But, you know, our natural tendency, as soon as someone gives us a dollar, is we go and buy some ice cream. You know, like, we don't really calculate and do much more with it. We just think of immediate sense gratification. So you kind of need these upper rings. And without them, you're not going to have an example. And I mean, so the Shudras aren't given so much money. They're definitely given all facility of security. They're given full healthcare, pension, all those things. I mean, if you're a Vaishya and the Shudra in the land that you own is sick, then you make sure he gets better. If he's old, then you look after him because he looked after you. He spent his whole life looking after his family and looking after your business. So then naturally you have to, you feel to be a human being, you have to look after this person. Nowadays we have a little, you know, a few government organized things for that sometimes, but it's not really the case. We don't have so much like people, it's very impersonal. It's like more systemized. At least in Australia you get like a pension, but if you earn too much, you can't get this much pension. If you have this much in your savings, they take money away from you. It's all like calculated. And you know, if you're not good with money when you're old, then you're gonna end up in the streets. And sometimes you see occasionally in the cities, you see some old people homeless in the streets because no one looked after them. I mean, but Varnashram it's not supposed to be like that. You have a worker, and he spends your life working for you. He raises a family who work for your business. And there's a big family because, you know, they've got an agrarian civilization, so they don't mind having lots of children. Like in our civilization, you have a child and it's like, how much does it cost to raise a child now? I think it's like $500,000 per child. You get two children, you know, you unwon the lottery. you're going back. So this is the nature of industrial civilization. It's a real taking society. You just got to raise money just to like survive. But in an agrarian civilization, you know, wherever you tread, it's food, you know. I mean, food means money. I mean, what do we spend our money on mostly? Food, shelter, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. This is what people spend their money on. And the excess, then they spend on illicit sex, gambling, meat eating, and intoxication. This is naturally what the general society will do. You need to have a society that is built on eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, so to speak. Like having that, like, you know, you need to have a society that doesn't have to go to the city, work an IT job, to then pay a machine farmer in the country to get him food and the transport in the between and, you know, all his running costs. And then you've got to gas ripen the fruit, and the fruit has got to be sprayed because no one wants to get a fruit that's got a worm in it. Like, you're so far away from your food and you've got so many things in between that you've actually got to, you probably in the end have to work harder. Like, we have to work to pay people to bring us things that we can't get that should be right in front of our door. We should be able to walk outside of our house and we have food. We shouldn't, you know, if we're hungry, we should be able to go get some food. We shouldn't have to, you know, then go find a job, get some work, go to some, come back, and then, you know, look some food with our money. Like, we should have food. And what's going to happen when society collapses? What's going to happen when the truck driver doesn't show up? You know, how long is it going to take for a community to go into starvation when all the facility that we depend on falls apart? You know, what if some terrorists come and blow up a bunch of petrol stations? How long are we going to last, you know, with no fuel? Or, you know, what's going to happen when the electricity runs out? I used to work in an electricity company, and we've got a good chance that it's going to run out. It's not really based on anything that's going to last. So, I mean, right now we don't really care for, like, for farming or Varnashram or anything, but, you know, it's because we're kind of on an inflated society that's, well, it's we can see it's running itself to the ground. We want to say it's 10 years, we want to say it's 20, we want to say it's the next generation that's going to have to deal with it, or, you know, not our kids, but their kids maybe, or, you know something else. Like, we don't want to deal with it, but actually the society is run on a lot of capital, and the capital is running out. The way we do everything is damaging. It's mode of passion. It doesn't have long-lasting results. With the way we farm, we crush the earth, and eventually the earth is not usable anymore. It's hard. It's barren. It's a wasteland. And, you know, we're polluting like anything. All the rivers, you can't drink from the rivers anymore. I mean, a good agrarian society needs a river. You need water. I mean, who doesn't need water besides this yogi that was on TV last year? I mean, you need water. You need food. You need water. And if the water is polluted, you see in Africa and all these countries, the majority of people don't have fresh drinking water because, you know, of all the things we do to the countries. We just go around and we just stuff them up. Shri Radha Gopinath ki. So in Radhadesh we have spring water. We have it from the ground. I don't know how far we had to dig for that. I don't know how practical that is. 60 metres. Okay. So we had to dig 60 metres in the ground for water. So we would have needed a big drill for that, right? So if we didn't have a big drill, we wouldn't have water. And the town water here, I mean, it's like, I don't know, they get it and then they have to treat it and they have to put chemicals in it. And no one likes to drink town water these days, especially devotees. They don't like it because it's got this chemical and that fluoride's in the water, and most people think fluoride makes you dumb or easier to brainwash. I don't know or it's just not good for you. So, like, you can see all the water is contaminated, and if you want water, you've got to dig really, really deep into the ground. Like, that's madness. I mean, we're lucky we have the facility that we can dig 60 metres in the ground, but if we don't have the facility, we're going to be dehydrated. So, yeah, you can see that actually it's better to have a civilization where your needs, your basic, your bare necessities are sitting at your doorstep. And it just seems practical, but we've kind of gotten in this big hype from, like, I don't know, God knows when, probably hundreds of years ago. We all run to the cities and we all just left a man and a machine to make all the crops. And I mean, now it's getting so bad that we have to genetically modify the vegetables and the fruits so they work, you know, and the nutrients in them is so little that actually being a vegetarian, it scares a lot of people because they're like, where are you going to get your nutrients? Of course, the meat is not any better. That's the thing. So, you know, the meat is pumped full of hormones and all sorts of other things just to make it, you know, make it survive. So, yeah, I mean, we think we're really advanced in modern civilization, but we're creating really complex systems to just kind of cheat ourselves out of what we had so easily, and now we're losing it. You know, like, in one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga is just there's no food, and the government is just taxing the bag out of us, and then everyone just runs to the forest because there's more chance of them surviving in the forest than there is in society. So you can see that starting to happen. You know, it's, you know, the taxes are going up and the food is, you know, the prices are going over the roof. And so eventually you're not going to be, you know, your people aren't going to be able to survive. you know, that's why now they're just encouraging people to just use contraceptive devices because children are just going to, they're just going to cost us too much. In China, you're only allowed to have one kid, as far as I know. Is that the case in China? Like, you can only have one kid. It's like, there's too many people there. They can't feed them. So they just say you have one kid and that's it. Then the rest, you get an abortion, you know, you can't keep them. Whereas in Varanashram, it's like, you should at least have like 7 kids. Because, I mean, why not? Each one of them is going to bring you money. It's going to bring you food. The more children you have in a Varanashram society, the wealthier you are. You have, like, every time... And, how much more is it appreciated? Like, nowadays, it's like a big drama you see often in Hollywood and all the movies, a woman falls pregnant. She doesn't know whether to tell her husband or not, or her boyfriend or whatever it is, because she's afraid of what he will say. She's not sure if he's going to be happy or not, whether she's had a kid, because it means it's a big responsibility to have a child in modern society. In Varanashram society, if you have a kid, there's like a celebration. When he's born, there's a celebration. When his teeth come out, there's a celebration. When he turns one, there's a celebration. There's a celebration every other day. When Krishna went out to the field for the first day, there was a celebration. His mother wanted to give him an umbrella and chamra servants and all sorts of things and a golden rope and everything. And he was kind of a little bit upset because he just wanted to be a little coward boy. So, I mean, there's so much celebration because these children, they're bringing something useful. Like, how often do you see your child and they get to teenage years and they just kind of lose the plot? They just start taking intoxication and they can't get a job. You know, their head's completely spun out on marijuana and they can't even think straight. And you know, most people need psychological help. I used to go around on Sankirtan in Australia and I used to tell people that 7 out of 10 people in Australia have a mental illness or depression. 7 out of 10. That means, you know, 2 out of 3 people. It means the majority of people have a mental illness that is, you know, clinically treatable in Australia, which, you know, there's no shortage of good weather and good times in Australia, but everyone is miserable. I mean, this is a statistic done by, you know, a psychological foundation who want to get business as well, but either way, it's pretty accurate. When I told that to people, they'd freeze, they'd get really solemn and grave, and they'd pull out money and they'd take a book because they were scared. You know, when you tell them that, they finally go, they think to themselves, oh, I'm supposed to be more happy. You know, they realize that they're not supposed to be miserable. They realize something's wrong with them. It's like they realize it's a disease that they have. They're miserable. So this is, I mean, no one's useful. I mean, they get to teenage years, they ruin their life, and then they're not useful. And when you're not useful, you feel miserable. Like when I do a day and in Radhadesh and nothing happens, and I feel depressed because I'm like, I wasted the day. You feel like you wasted a day. People feel like they wasted their lives. They hit 40, they have a midlife crisis because they haven't done anything useful with their lives. And Varanashram is made that people find out what they like to do and what they're good at doing, and you give them that service. You give them that, and they do it, and they do it well, and they're happy. And no worker is sad that they've got little pay because they have all facilities that they would work. I mean, we work for money because we want security and we want food, we want these things. These are given. This is like basic. You have it most of the time. So you don't struggle for those things. So when you work, you're satisfied. You know that the kids are okay at home. You know, the wife and the children are okay, or the husband's okay. Everyone's fine. I'm just going to work because I like this work, because otherwise I'm going to get bored anyway. If I sit at home all day, I'm just gonna go crazy. So you got work, and you're good at it, and you like to do it. You know, the people who like to plow the fields plow the fields. The people who like to do business, they do business. The self-esteem issue is gone. Psychological problems. You know, the biggest issue nowadays medically is mental illness. It's the biggest rising issue. You know, forget, you know, lung cancer or any other cancer. It's mental illness. People are really, really upset. So that's gone. I mean, everyone's happy. They got something they really like to do. They got a really good boss. He gives them everything they need. He's not trying to exploit them more than he needs to because he's got enough money. He's fine. He's not freaking out. The government are really good. I mean, they make sure all the thieves are arrested. I mean, they're heavy, but you need to be heavy. You know, they make sure And they're not just going around and giving you speeding tickets, because I mean, you can't really speed on a bullock and cart. It's pretty hard. You know, I mean, they're taxing and they're fining for good reasons, and you know it. Like, the Vaishya is very happy to give a quarter of what he makes to the... some say quarter. I mean, there's different measurements. Some say tenths, some say quarter. And Varnashram, they give like... they're happy because this king is managing society in a way that their land is protected, their cows are protected, their servants are protected. And actually, they're all going back to Godhead, or they're all at least going back to the heavenly planets or something. They're all advancing, actually, because he is really respectful to the Brahmanas, and the Brahmanas are doing yagyas, and the Brahmanas, you know, nowadays, I mean, the Brahmanas are doing Sankirtan yagya, they're going out and chanting Hare Krishna in the streets. So these things are being done, so they know that actually when they leave their body, they've had a good life, and their next life is going to be also good. And they're going to be born in a society that is the same, and maybe in a higher grade, and they're going to be going back to Godhead. So everyone is really, really happy. I mean, they're not scared of death. They're not scared of life. there's no fear anymore. So, I mean, this is the idealistic situation that you'd have with Varnashram society. But, of course, organizing the system is automatically going to make it better than what it is with no organization. Prabhupada, in some of his quotes, he adamantly protests against this education where every single person is taught the same thing. And I mean, how many of us went through that education and hated school? Either it wasn't practical enough, or it wasn't challenging enough, or it wasn't interesting enough. There's so many reasons, because it's just this one thing, and you just stick everyone inside of it. You see, actually, the high achieving schools, what do? They develop people into certain grades. Like, my brother went to a school for just a couple of years of high school where he specialized in basketball. I mean, he was good at basketball, so they specialized in basketball. I mean, they taught him that he went to like these highly sophisticated training methods where they got his muscles to do all these certain, you know, he had like a workout schedule and everything, and he had jumping programs and everything. Like, and he only did it for a couple of years, but I mean, it was what he was good at. He was good at sports. I mean, he still plays basketball now, but I mean, sports is a hard one to make money from. But, you know, like, or a creative school, or a high, you know, you're creative, and then they give you all facility. And then a lot of those schools, then they have employment opportunities with professional companies. They have, like, a film school will have film contacts, and the high-achieving students, they most likely get a job. So the students, they love what they do, and they're going to work really hard because they know if they work hard, they might actually get that job that they really want to do for the rest of their life. I mean, yeah, I mean, this is just the material level of Varnashram. And then, I mean, of course, then you have the Brahminical society established, so then you have the spiritual also. But you can see, even on the material basis, it's got benefits. So even if you want to have a materialistic society, you may as well do Varnashram. Even the demons, you know, like they would often do Varnashram. Jarasandha, famous, infamous king of the Bhagavatam, he was imprisoning kings and offering them in sacrifice to his deity, but he otherwise was very respectful to the Brahmanas. He was looking after them because he knew if the Brahmanas are looked after, then my society is going to be good. And when Bhima and Krishna and Arjuna came to fight him, he was very, very receptive. He gave them a seat, he gave them a place. When he was fighting with Bhima every night, they were stopping and they were having entertainment and their big prasadam feasts or whatever they were eating. And like that, he was very orderly, but he was a demon. He was straight out demon. He was evil. I mean, he was an evil guy, but he knew at least for himself that he should, besides his little crazy tantric killing people worship on the side, he was doing things that were really beneficial because he knew that it was going to keep his society running and people were going to be, you know, he was at least, like, if you want to be proud, at least be proud about real things, you know, at least material, tangible things. So he had some reason to be proud, you know, he had a good society. I mean, so demoniac or daivic, I mean, the difference between demoniac and the daivic Varnashram system is that the demoniac is, you know, you're going to have a peaceful life now, but then it's not going to take you to a higher place later. Whereas, you know, the daivic Varnashram, it's going to bring you up. Of course, in the chapter later, you have the symptoms of a brahmana, symptoms of a kshatriya. You know, brahmana is always like truth and knowledge. We know those things often. Kshatriya is always like chivalry and bravery and managerial skills. In the Vaishya section, it was kind of interesting because it had Deva, Guru, Achyuta, Bhakti. So the Vaishya should have devotion to the demigods, to the Guru, and to God. So, it's actually in the symptoms of a Vaishya. I mean, you see Nanda Maharaj, he's worshipping the Sringadev every day for the protection of Krishna. So, I mean, it's a very religious society. You can't just think that you got the brahmanas and then you got these like materialistic kshatriyas and these really materialistic vaishyas and then materialistic shudras. Now, the vaishyas were godly, the kshatriyas are godly, the brahmanas are godly, and the shudras, seeing every single other person in society being godly, they're also godly. There was worship going on, definitely. There was personal worship. It wasn't also that everyone was just impersonalist either. A lot of people were personalists. They were God worshippers, they were Vishnu worshippers, or, you know, all they were worshipping the demigods. The majority of people weren't doing that. And the Shudras were doing that because everyone else was doing it. You know, they just kind of follow the masses and all the people that are more, you know, seemingly more advanced than them. After this, it goes on to talk about Stri Dharma, the duties of women. I'm not going to make too many comments on that because, believe it or not, I'm a man. But it has a few interesting points that actually, like Prabhupada talks about, if the husband is not following the four regulative principles, then you don't divorce, but you live separately. Or if the woman is not chaste, then you live separately from them. And that if there is a householder with no fights, if there's a house with no fights, then the goddess of fortune lives there. I don't know if the goddess of fortune lives in too many houses. But in that section also it talks about, I mean, you got protecting women and then Varna Shankara. Because what's happening is Varna Shankara is where men and women are really loose in society. And it's basically translated to interbreeding, like, a brahmana lady is with a shudra man and this and that and that and this, because it means that no one is really taking their principles seriously enough. And it's easy to say, well, no, you know, everyone's a spirit soul and you can't say that this person's more advanced than that person. But materially speaking, you have gradations of karma and you have to have, you know, some people who are, you know, a little bit more advanced, because otherwise, you know, everyone, like I said, everyone's going to be limited. So, and it's very clear if you have a proper, like Hitler read the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedas and all these things, and he tried his hardest to implement them in society, and yeah. He tried. I mean, the problem is he then added his own little speculation of, you know, kill everyone else. So he was trying to make, you know, this really good advanced society, but, you know, he was killing all the people who would be the shudras. So, you know, in the end, he would have had a bunch of kshatriyas and vaishyas who were evil and no shudras to work for them, and they would have died anyway. So, like, I mean, the point is, you if you have advanced people, you make sure they keep advancing. And, you know, you don't marry off, you know, like a brahminically trained lady to, you know, the street thug boy because, you know, he's kind of cute or, you know, he's got a sad story and we want to kind of help him out. No, you have to be serious. I mean, how many people want their children to marry someone who's like not productive or just sinful? I mean, that's the biggest fear for a lot of parents, is when their children finally get to an age where they can start a relationship, who are they going to end up with? And because no one is ever good enough for your child, and I mean, pretty much because no one is really good these days. I mean, we don't have so many. There's only a few good men or none, you know, like that saying, a few good men. There's not many people who are qualified, so it's really hard to actually keep people, keep quality people. But if you have quality people, you have to find quality people, because You know, they're going to, by better to have them quality, because by their quality, they'll set good examples and then other people will rise up. Rather than making them compromise, thinking that, you know, it'll balance out, it's better to keep them at a good quality, and then people will, you know, people will see their example and follow. It's like, it's false missionary work to just kind of, I think actually, yeah, in school, if you have a class, they have grades of the classes, like English class and math. And why it is because the people in the lower classes, they'll advance sometimes. And then sometimes they'll advance so much they can go into a higher class. But if you have the people in the lower class in the higher class, the students never actually advance. So it's not fair to say that someone's a high achiever, that you bring them down and equal out society and everyone is just, you know, useless altogether. It's better to have, you know, some people who actually do some significant things in life, and we help them out as well. And in this situation, actually, it's not that, you know, the lower are damned and the higher are going up. It's that the higher are going up and then the lower are also going up, seeing the higher and having good facility in their grade also. It's not a society. It's not an elitist society where, you know, you just have like a few people who are looked after and everyone else is thrown into the sewer. That's a misconception. So in that case, there's people are very aware of marital who they marry their children to, and it's also it's a point of getting along. Like I said before, if there's no fights in the household, then the goddess of fortune lies there. If you have someone of a similar nature, you'll get along, believe it or not. You don't have to find someone that's, you know, completely foreign to you, can't speak your language, doesn't like anything you like, and then try to, you know, make a relationship out of it. It's better to find someone, you know, like someone who's got an equal financial situation, so, you know, one person's not demanding so much of the other person because they have a similar moral values. I mean, a lot of people, like, you know, you see people that have interreligious marriages and it gets difficult. I mean, what to speak of, you know, a Jewish Catholic child is going to be very confused. I mean, and often, like, love prevails, but it's normally because the people are a little bit, they're not so shallow, they have higher values than just basic dogmas. But it's very difficult, you know, to try and, you know, when one value is this way and one value is that way, and then try to agree on that with children. I mean, oh my God, good luck. I'm going to take my hat off to those people. It's best to find people like-minded. And in the Vedic society, I mean, you've got everything to do that. You've got a society that people are recognised in their social positions. You've got astrology. You can get your astrology done. You can see that it's compatible. And then, you know, you have a lot of senior people to ask advice about. You know, you've got brahmanas and you've got people who know that, you know, when you go to Gurukula, I think a lot of the essence of the education is that you have one guru and he knows you throughout your whole education. So he knows whether you're a kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, because he can see your symptoms. As someone who, often a lot of the time, people know us better than we know ourselves, because where the example is when you're in the fishbowl, you can't see so much what's going on in the fishbowl, but when you have a view outside of the fishbowl, you can see a lot of what's going on. Especially, you know, if they're an experienced person like a brahmana or a guru, and they're looking at this, you know, a young boy or a young girl. In that regard also, and in regards to Sri Dharma, I think it's a misconception to say that women weren't educated in Varnashram society. I think, because they didn't go to Gurukula. I mean, Gurukula, to set things straight, Gurukula is a boarding school in the middle of the forest. So women were not sent to boarding schools in the middle of the forest. Not all boys were sent to the boarding schools in the middle of the forest either. A lot of them were trained up by their parents. And daughters were trained up by their parents or sometimes other people. It wasn't that they just were stuck, you know, and suppressed. And they learned a lot of things. We just studied Vedas and Upanishads, and Yajnavalkya is one of the verse I chose to do in my essay on. Yajnavalkya is talking to his wife, who is educated in the Upanishads. She's a theologian. She knows the essence of the Vedas to an extent. I mean, he knew more because he was a sage of a high caliber, but he was having a highly advanced philosophical discussion with her, which still confuses me now. And as far as I know, she understood it in the end. So, I mean, it's not a society that suppresses anyone. I mean, idealistically, of course, if you misuse it, then you can suppress a lot of people if you want to. But when the society is run properly, then people are given opportunity to advance. All people, not just a king, not just a brahmana, not just a vaishya, and not just a man. It's everyone. Everyone gets a chance, not just an adult. I mean, let's skip through a few things. And then Prabhupada makes a point that I think Narada Muni is making the point that, Varnashram, to different extents, is applicable in every yuga. Often we'll say it's Kali Yuga, it's not applicable. It's a lot harder, but it's applicable. Sri Pallada once said in one of his classes, I'm quoting him because I don't have the reference, that Parashara Muni, who's the father of Vyasadeva, he wrote a book on applicable religious principles in the age of Kali Yuga. In case the Manu Samhita is out of fashion, he wrote a book, and I'm sorry I don't have the reference, but my point is that things are still relevant now. I mean, they don't speak about Varnashram all throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam for the people in Dvapara Yuga, because if you actually look at the context, you realize that it's spoken at the end of Dvapara Yuga for the people in Kali Yuga. It's for us. It's not for Yudhishthira that Narada Muni is speaking these principles for. It's for us. I mean, the Yuga has ended. Now it's Kali Yuga, and then we get these books. So these Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharata, Srimad Bhagavatam, these books are for the people of Kali Yuga. And of course some are a little bit more advanced than where we're at now, but we can definitely progress if we decide to. So we can't just neglect what's said in these things and say it's not applicable in our society. It is 100% or at least 80-90% applicable for us. It was given to us for our use. It wasn't given to it wasn't given to Ramachandra and Hanuman. It wasn't given to Krishna and the cowherd boys. It was given to us. It's given to our yuga. And and Lord Chaitanya, what does he quote from? He quotes from the Bhagavatam, he quotes from Bhagavad Gita, he quotes from Vedanta Sutra. He quotes from these books because they're the books that we're supposed to use. We're not supposed to rewrite these books and make a new book, Kali Yuga, Dharma or whatever. We have things that we can do. And I think it's not so clear because we don't really have a real strong Brahminical society yet. To really kind of, like, we don't have really well-established Gurukulas. We only have, like, well, maybe one or two that you could call, like, really pukka. And even then, they haven't been fully organized in a way that they fully reciprocate with society, that, you come out and you get a job in your vana or anything. Yeah, we haven't really fully developed the education aspect of this. We don't have that yet. I went to a Gurukula, but it was like, there wasn't so many things that, besides nice people, there wasn't so many people, so many things that separate it from a normal education. We learned a few extra slokas and a few bhajans, but we weren't, I don't know the Bhagavad Gita or the Bhagavatam off by heart from Gurukula or anything like that. I can't give godly instructions based on what I learned in Gurukula, because we were just given the basics. And then, you have Bhakti Vijayapuna Swami's Gurukula, you have, they're learning mantras and things like that. But still, I mean, we don't have a really big society yet where they come out and then they're given a job as a brahmana, kshatriya, or vaishya based on their propensities. So, I mean, really, that's what I mean by, like, having a society. Because you have a society where you go to, like, we have it now. In normal society, you go to school and then you get a job. This is normal society. So we need that. But we need that with our understanding, because they don't have our understanding. So we need a school where you leave school and you get a job, but you get a job that you're going to really do well at. And we have a society where people care for you. That was the difference between regular school and Gurukula, is that I was very genuinely convinced that my Gurukula teachers cared about my life and they wanted me to go back to Godhead and they wanted me to have a successful life. In normal school, I couldn't be sure, because I spent about 3 years being unnoticed, and you become very good at it, because you begin to realize that the teacher, whether they care about you or not, they just can't manage the amount of students they have. It's not really idealistic a situation for education. And I very much thought I was, you know, an idiot, and I probably still think I'm an idiot, but I didn't think I was ever going to go to university or college or anything like this, because, you know, there was nothing empowering about the association of those schools. So if you have a school where the where your teacher is your well-wisher, and they organise everything not just to keep you busy throughout the day so you don't, you know, cause a nonsense, they give you activities that they want to bring you up, bring up your standard of life, and give you a career and morals and things, then you're going to progress a lot more. I mean, and you see Prabhupada, he established Gurukulas. That was one of the things he did. And it wasn't just something he did on the side as like a little, you know, maybe we should have the Gurukulas. No, he established one in Vrindavan and in the West. And, like, he was adamant, and he was teaching students Sanskrit and all sorts of things. I mean, if you have teachers that have ill character, it doesn't really go well with your education. And Prabhupada, he also, in these purports, he quotes Chanakya Pandit and all sorts of other things as well. And just on that note also, you know, Krishna and Rishabhadeva and a lot of incarnations, they went to school to kind of encourage us to also go to school. And you see actually, like, in the Sri Upanishad, there's a really heavy verse on, you know, mundane education. It's like the jewel, Prabhupada's saying, it's like the jewel in the head of a cobra and things. So, like, you have to have spiritual education, and you can have material education, but you have to have the spiritual education, because you have a material education on its own, you're going to get distracted. So anyway, like, I think just a little maybe an overview. We have these varnas. It's not to limit us. It's not to group us in these really hard boxes where we try to break out of. It's supposed to actually bring us up. And they're not like, it's not that just, you know, a brahmana is a one job. There's many brahminical jobs. There's many types of kshatriyas and vaishyas and shudras. It's not that, you know, every single shudra has to grow potatoes. It's not that every single brahmana has to, you know, be a pujari or be a teacher, for that matter. It's not that every single, you know, vaishya has to even work on a farm. They don't have to all be farmers either. You know, you can still have bankers and things. These classes are not what we think they are, in the sense that they limit us, our spectrum. They're bringing us up, and they're giving us the proper facility that we really need. And because we don't have this class of society, we are not being given the facilities we need most of the time, because there's not enough infrastructure to support brahmanas rising up, kshatriyas rising up, businessmen, and even workers to really have a job that they really like. You know, workers are often just exploited and not appreciated. So this system is based on a society that's going to bring us up. And as Prabhupada said a lot throughout his conversations of Varnashram, it has to be focused on Krishna. Everyone can chant Hare Krishna. A Shudra can chant Hare Krishna. Even a Malecha can chant Hare Krishna. There's no limitations on who can chant the holy name. Prabhupada later in one of his quotes, he'll say that not necessarily the person working on the field has to get brahminical initiation, actually. He said we can be more strict with our brahminical initiation. We don't just have to give it out to every single devotee once they've, you know, been a devotee, an initiated devotee for 1 year. We can really be, you know, when we have a society, we can be more careful with these things, because it means a lot. You know, you're getting the Gayatri Mantra, and your standard has to kind of really pick up. Otherwise, you might be in a little bit of trouble. So, and actually, all the difference between Varnashram and a non Varnashram society is education, actually. And that's, I mean, that's why these Varnas are educated into us. A Brahmana is born a Brahmana only in the sense that they're given easier education. They're not a Brahmana by birth in the sense that they can just go out and not learn anything and then claim to be a Brahmana. They're only really born, they've got good metaphysical, they've got a good subtle and physical body based on their birth, but they do not have the training yet. They have to get the training to become a Brahmana. And a Vaishya and a Kshatriya and even a Shudra need some kind of training. You need training in society. So we do not have this training. We have perverted reflection of it. We have some kind of training, but we don't have that. So actually, if we want to, we say that, we often say that Varnashram is a bit hard, and even Prabhupada says that it's pretty hard in these days. But if we want to achieve it, we need to make educational institutions. We need to have our schooling system going. We need it, and we need to figure out what we're going to teach as well. We can't just teach anything. We have to have a very pointed and a very focused education system where the teachers, like now, I mean, we go to Bhaktivedanta College. The teachers here, that's why I like this college, because you feel like they're actually here to help us. I mean, they're not here to make money. At least I hope not, because it doesn't show very much about their money-making ability. Anyway, yeah, like, they're here to help us. And that's what I remember from Gurukul, is, like, these teachers are there to help you. So you need that in society. You need people to... Like, it can't be this endless competition of dragging everyone else down to bring you up. You need people to help you. You need the blessings of seniors. You can't just go on your own whim. You need, you know, blessings of guru and parents and you know, the sannyasis and vanaprasthas and senior devotees. Those blessings they're materialized in the sense that you get the actual facility from them as well. You know, it's not just, you know, happy wishes and thumbs up. You get proper facility. And the education in these days, I mean, it was free, or it was like what you could afford, and the rest was subsidized by the government, by the Kshatriyas. So, I mean, we have education subsidized by the government also. I mean, so there's a little bit of it, but we can really, if we really wanted to in our society, if we really wanted to, we could really make a really solid, a really powerful educational institution that trains people up to be really decent human beings and then really good devotees. And then we won't be seen as a sect, we'll be seen as like a really genuine movement of really nice people. And we would barely have to preach. We'd just walk around in our society and people would want to become devotees. I mean, even now people see devotees and they say they're effulgent, you know. What to speak of if we really worked on making them really, you know, from birth, really focus on bringing out their really good qualities. And I think that also if we have a Varnashram institution where you're guaranteed a livelihood and a situation by the end of your education, we won't have so many Gurukulis falling off. Like we did. If you have, like a lot of them say now, I talk to them, there was nothing for us in the society. And a lot of them still complain about that. They have a little whinge. And they've got good reason. We don't really have something to bring them into. It's like you go, okay, if you guys want to join the society, we can give you a job with no pay and you just rely on Krishna. I mean, yeah, we have a lot of good things, but if we could really give them a society that they'd want to be a part of, where they really kind of, and they've been raised with a varna that they know what they're going to become, and they're ready for it, then we won't have so many people thinking that material energy has got something better for them, because we have it all. We'll have spiritual and material, because, you know, Krishna is always accompanied by the goddess of fortune. So we can't think that, you know, spiritual life means that we're going to have nothing. I mean, it's good to be detached, but we can't just expect that everyone wants to live in a cave, and we won't. We'll have societies and anyway. So, I suppose what my emphasis now is that we should somehow work towards really having a solid education, and that will take, you know, maybe at least it has to take one generation, because you've got to educate them. But, you know, that may take one or two generations, but we have to do it. And if we don't do it, then we're never going to have. Then we're constantly going to have Varnashram classes and everyone's going to be scratching their heads on what that means and why it's good for us. So I'm going to stop here. I went on a little longer because I know breakfast is always late. Are there any questions or comments or reprimands, chastisements? Jamasra Guru? He's a Vaishya. Yeah. He's the king of the Vaishyas, but he's a Vaishya. I mean, they use the title king, but it's like... you need at least a village. Like the Pandavas said, we need at least a village. This was the minimum they needed to survive. A Kshatriya cannot... Prabhupada says that really, Kshatriyas don't change Varna, even almost in emergencies. They need, like, an emergency for a Kshatriya is all they have is a village. That's an emergency. You know, they need something to govern. They just have that propensity. So, like, Nanda Maharaj, the Kshatriya governing Nanda Maharaj was Kamsa. He was running, so he was under Kamsa. Kamsa was the king. And Nanda Maharaj, see, the Vaishyas, they manage also. They manage a big plot of land. So the Kshatriyas and all the Vaishyas, they own the land, so to speak. So medieval society had that too. You had your dukes and your kings and things. So they have their... Nanda Maharaj, he was a senior member of society. He had an older brother, and he had lots of brothers, actually. But a tricky, interesting thing about Nanda Maharaj is actually his father was a king. His mother was a Vaishya woman, and his father was a king, and actually Vasudeva is his brother. I don't know if it's in the Krishna book, but it's in the Bhagavatam, for sure. That's why he was such good friends with Vasudeva. And that's why Vasudeva sent Krishna to be with Nanda Maharaj, because they were brothers. They were close friends and they were brothers. And Devaki and Yasoda were also friends. So he was a Vaishya. So you see there, you have a king as a father and a Vaishya as a mother, and then he was classed as a Vaishya, but he was a very influential Vaishya. So you can see, like, it's not that just, you know, everyone was stuck in a varna, you know what I mean? Like two brothers from different mothers, same father, took two different varnas. And that was based on, you know, their propensities. I mean, I'm sure Nanda Maharaj could have stayed in the kingdom and he might not have become a king, because it does say in the section that there were people that were born of a king but not of a Kshatriya mother, and they didn't become kings, but they lived like princes, you know. So Nanda Maharaj could have lived like a prince, but instead he was a Vaishya and he made a lot of money. So he didn't need to, and he had enough facility to just run his own business. Is that okay? Anyone else? Okay, we'll finish. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Bhagavat Prasadam ki. Oh yes, I have a survey for students. So students, please stay behind. We have a survey that everyone can fill out.